If asking your mate down the pub about vaping, here's what they'd probably say. No one agrees if it's safer or not, so you might as well smoke anyway. Now what your mate needs is a Cochrane review. All the facts have been checked at least twice. They'd find there's a lot that the experts agree on and might give you different advice.
Hi, my name is Nicola and I'm a researcher based at the University of Oxford in the UK.
And I'm Jamie and I'm a researcher based at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the United States.
We are both members of the Cochrane Tobacco Addiction Group. Welcome to this edition of Let's Talk E-Cigarettes. This podcast is a companion to a research project being carried out at the University of Oxford, where every month we research the e-cigarette research literature to find new studies. We then use these studies to update our Cochrane systematic reviews of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation and interventions for quitting vaping. This type of review is called a living systematic review, and in each episode we start by going through the studies we found that month and then go into more detail about a particular study or topic related to e-cigarettes.
Before we get going with what our searches turned up this month, we want to remember to share with you that updates to both of our reviews were published in the last month. We've been busy. Our update of our review of interventions for quitting vaping was updated with an additional 6 new studies covering searches to July 1st, 2025. It now includes a study on a smartphone app combined with text messaging and a study comparing higher versus lower dose nicotine replacement therapy. The main conclusions to the review remain unchanged. For our review of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, an additional 14 new studies were incorporated, covering searches up to the 1st of March, 2025. The update was triggered because the first study comparing nicotine e-cigarettes with non-nicotine e-cigarettes and varenicline and reporting abstinence at 6 months or longer was published. That is a big study in terms of representing a new and important comparison in the field. Its results were inconclusive, and there were no changes to the main conclusions of the review. This month, we ran our searches on the 1st of November, 2025. We found 2 new studies and 3 new ongoing studies. Of the 3 ongoing studies, 1 is of vaping cessation, and the other 2 test e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. Nicola is going to tell you about the new ongoing vaping cessation trial in a nutshell.
This study is being led out of the University of Nebraska in the US. It is funded by the National Cancer Institute and aims to recruit 100 parent-adolescent pairs. The study is setting out to develop and test the feasibility of a new Parents Helping Parents for Youth Vaping Cessation program, consisting of online lessons for participating parents and adolescents and one-on-one sessions with a coach for parents. Vaping and other tobacco use will be measured up to 6 months. The study has not yet started recruiting and aims to complete at the end of next year.
Of the 2 new ongoing studies of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, the first is a trial being led out of Clemson University in the US. They are aiming to recruit 90 people with opioid use disorder on buprenorphine who also smoke, and they want to investigate the impact of e-cigarette flavors and usage patterns on achieving harm reduction milestones. The trial's not yet started recruiting, and estimated completion is toward the end of 2029. Data on smoking, vaping, and carbon monoxide will be collected up to 6 months, and the study is being funded by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. The second new ongoing study of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation is funded by the tobacco industry. It's a randomized controlled trial on the effects of e-cigarette flavor availability on smoking abstinence at 3 months. The study is aiming to recruit just under 2,000 participants, so it's a big one, and to complete at the end of next year. Both of our new completed studies are of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. It's been an active month in that area. Nicola, will you tell us about the first?
Yes, Jamie. So the first new included study was authored by Robinson and colleagues at the University of Texas. The study was a randomized controlled crossover trial where for the first 2 weeks, all of the participants used their usual cigarettes. Then the participants were split into 2 groups. In the first group, participants used nicotine e-cigarettes for 2 weeks and then a non-nicotine e-cigarette for a further 2 weeks. In the second group, the participants used the non-nicotine e-cigarettes first and then swapped to the nicotine cigarettes. The crossover nature of this study means that it has a short follow-up, and so we will only be looking at adverse events and respiratory symptoms data from this study. And there was no evidence that adverse events differed in frequency or respiratory symptoms differed based on study conditions. The study was funded by the US National Institute on Drug Abuse and the MD Anderson's Cancer Center.
Thanks so much, Nicola. And I'll cover the second new study in this month's deep dive. So this month, I had the pleasure of speaking with Allie Levins, an assistant professor at the University of Kansas in the U.S., about her new study published in Frontiers in Public Health, entitled E-Cigarette Puff Topography Instruction to Enhance Switching Among COPD Patients Who Smoke. The study was supported by pilot funds from the Cancer Prevention and Control Program within the University of Kansas Cancer Center, as well as by the National Cancer Institute. Okay, so to start off, can you tell us about your background and what got you into e-cigarette research?
Absolutely. So I'm a clinical psychologist by training, and in graduate school, I actually came in interested in alcohol use and brief interventions for alcohol, but had the opportunity to do a summer training program with Dr. Ted Wagner. And through that, you know, never really thought I would become a tobacco researcher, but became really, really interested in this area and predominantly really in, you know, looking at strategies to help adults who smoke quit. And then later on, really transitioning to thinking about helping folks reduce exposure to tobacco harms, particularly for those who would otherwise continue to smoke. And I was in graduate school at sort of an interesting time in which Juul was coming on the market. So I started graduate school in 2013. So e-cigarettes were a thing, but they weren't really, you know, super common at that point. So there were a lot of vape shops around, but they weren't kind of in the place that they are now. And so I remember running a small study and one of our participants who was a college student asking me, well, what is Juul? Is Juul an e-cigarette? And I was like, well, I don't know what Juul is, right? And it just looked so different. And we know now that the formulation is so different. And so it was just a really interesting time to see this transition to, you know, those pod-based devices and then now disposable devices. So it's an exciting area to be.
Awesome. So will you tell us a little bit about your new trial? Like, what did you set out to look for, in what populations? Anything else you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. So this study is really based on some data from our group and others that showed that as people transition to e-cigarette use, that there are some differences in their topography or their puff patterns. So the ways in which they puff on the e-cigarette potentially differ as people make a transition to e-cigarettes, and that there might be some differences in their puff patterns between people who make a successful switch relative to those who don't make a switch or make an incomplete switch. So specifically, we had a paper that looked at data from adults who smoked as they, it was across 2 weeks. So as they made a transition to e-cigarettes across that period of time, and we looked at how their e-cigarette patterns changed over that switch attempt. And what was interesting was we saw that while the number of e-cigarette puffs taken per day remained pretty stable, we found that the average total e-cigarette puffing time increased over that time. And as cigarettes per day decreased, puff duration increased. Mm-hmm. So cigarette smoking goes down, but they're taking longer puffs over that same period of time. So we were wondering, does this mean that people essentially learn how to puff effectively as they make a switch attempt? And we wondered if we could speed this process up. So could we give people information about how to effectively puff on an e-cigarette to help them make that switch? So our trial was a 3-arm pilot randomized trial. So it was small. I'll give that caveat again and again. It was just 46 people. And we looked at 3 intervention arms. So the first was just brief advice to switch, along with a little bit of brief counseling around, you know, relative harms, things like that. And then we had a low intensity training as well as a high intensity training. So in those training arms, they received direct feedback on their puffing. So we brought them into the lab, we showed them the e-cigarette, and we actually flipped the computer around and let them watch their own topography. So we're able to use a device created by Alan Shihade, which shows graphically their puffs. And so
what
we
does
gave
it
them
look like? Just trying to visualize this.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can envision sort of on the bottom axis is time, and then sort of puff volume. You're actually their puffs look like little hills,
Cool.
right? And so you can tell them, okay, that was a 1 second puff. We know that people do better if they take longer puffs. Try to lengthen your puff to 2 seconds. Try to lengthen it to 3 seconds. So we're trying to have them emulate sort of that target topography that we saw people achieve and have success with in our cross-sectional sort of one slice study that we looked at. And so we either did that one time just at the beginning of the study, or we did it throughout the study 3 times. So at baseline, week 4, and then week 8. And then we looked at folks' data at that 12-week point. I'll note also that this study was a little bit unique. Again, it was a pilot, and so we were really trying to understand a few different things. One thing we wanted to know was sort of in an acute situation, right? So just right around the intervention, was our intervention having an impact? So we brought people into the lab twice. The first time they had never used an e-cigarette, and we gave it to them and said, puff on this however you'd like. And so we looked at things like their puff duration. And then we gave them the intervention. So we tried to show them how to use it in the way that we'd like them to use it, mostly focusing on puff duration, so lengthening their puffs. And then we sent them home for a couple of days, brought them back, and we looked, did we actually have an impact on their puff duration? So was the intervention effective sort of in that acute time? And I also want to note that this study enrolled participants who had COPD and who smoked. And importantly, they were not motivated to quit. So this is important because COPD is caused by, worsened by, and maintained by smoking, right? So these are people who really would benefit from quitting, but who have no motivation to quit. So they're telling us that they are unwilling to make a quit attempt in the next 30 days. So folks who would otherwise continue to smoke. So we had sort of two primary questions. The first was sort of at that basic level. This is what we were looking at in the lab. And really, the question being, will this topography instruction lead to increases in puff duration? So basically, can we instruct people on how to change their puffing to look more like somebody who has a successful switch? And then will doing this facilitate their switching?
What did you find?
Yeah, so I will give the huge caveat here again that this is a pilot trial, right? So we're not powered to look at these differences, but we did look at effect sizes instead. And so, first of all, we looked at sort of puff duration at the beginning of the trial. And so it looks like everybody was coming in with relatively similar puff durations. They were like a second to a second and a half, which is what we would expect. But contrary to what we expected, our trainings did not lead to meaningful changes in puff duration, not in the
Interesting.
short term or in the long term. So when we brought people back in, we didn't see that they were making changes over time, looking between the treatment arms. And so, as you would expect, we also didn't see meaningful changes in a lot of our other outcomes, like craving or withdrawal, or we even looked at nicotine delivery. So, like how much nicotine is being delivered to the blood. And we didn't see those in those sort of lab-based sessions. And in the randomized trial, right? So we then moved them into a 12-week RCT. Effects were small, but interestingly, our brief advice condition showed the highest rate of complete switching. We had, 38.5% in that group made a complete biochemically verified
Gosh.
switch, and they showed the largest reduction in cigarette smoking. So on average, they reduced their cigarette smoking about 17 and a half cigarettes per day. So definitely not what we expected, but I think still informative.
And why do you think, I mean, that is surprising, right? And that's also for people not motivated to quit at the start, a really impressive quit rate in that low intensity intervention arm. Why do you think, do you have any like ideas about why these findings came out this way?
I think we sort of were looking at two sides of the same coin. Like it might be that these are folks who have COPD. They know they need to quit, and it just didn't take a lot to sort of get them over the edge and sort of tip them towards quitting once we introduce the e-cigarette. It could be also that there's some evidence that to suggest that more intervention isn't always better. And so it could be that people sort of experience what we call treatment fatigue, right? They basically get tired of engaging in the treatment and that it just didn't end up being necessary. You know, I think the other thing our team has thought about is we sort of were training them to vape like somebody who has been vaping for a period of time, and it might just be too intense, right? So particularly for a population who's experiencing lung disease, it may just be too intense to go right straight into vaping like an experienced user.
That makes sense. I was wondering about that increased puff duration being something that kind of happened to people naturally, right, in the original study when they were ready to progress that way, whether or not that was conscious or subconscious. And yeah, I wonder if that's somehow different when you're trying to manipulate that in a lab setting.
Yep, absolutely. You know, one thing I will note is that we did hear from folks that they were excited about e-cigarettes. So I do want to highlight, right? We got pretty good switch rates in the brief advice, nearly 40%. And if you look kind of overall, we got 25% verified cigarette cessation. And so our participants were saying to us, like, gosh, I know I should quit. Everybody talks to me about quitting, but it's really difficult to do. And I've sort of lost hope. I've tried the things that my provider has told me to do, but I've never heard of e-cigarettes. I've never thought about switching with e-cigarettes. And so for the first time, I'm feeling hope. Of course, this is anecdotal, but I do wonder, when I think about future directions, I wonder about kind of looking at that a little bit more systematically for this population.
I'm assuming, but so I'm going to check my assumption with you that this is an older population generally, right? Just by the fact that they have COPD and therefore you might expect more of them to not be familiar with e-cigarettes.
So I think our mean age, I'd have to look back, but was around 60 years old. So we also know that this is a population where, for most age groups, cigarette smoking prevalence is decreasing. This is an age group where it's really not, right? It's kind of staying flat. And so again, maybe e-cigarettes are a place to look to potentially, diversify options for these individuals.
That's so interesting. Okay, so last question from me. If like funding wasn't an issue and you could get anything funded that you want, what would you think should be done next following these findings?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So again, I'll acknowledge that this was a small pilot, so it should be done in a larger sample size, a more definitive trial. But I think a lot about sort of the informal feedback we got from our patients, our participants in this study, who shared with us that they were interested in e-cigarettes. And we did get some pretty good quit rates with them. And there have really been very few studies of e-cigarettes in this population. So, while the topography piece of it is interesting to me, I think it's important to consider a trial potentially of e-cigarettes versus pharmacotherapy among COPD patients who smoke. And then I will give a little plug for a secondary data analysis we're doing of this pilot, where we're looking at changes in short-term health outcomes as a function of switch pattern. So we're sort of looking at those who made a predominant switch relative to those who didn't. And the data are intriguing. So we're showing numerical improvements in things like respiratory symptoms, cardiovascular health, aerobic capacity, COPD-related quality of life among those who made a predominant switch relative to those who didn't. So again, while that's a secondary data analysis of this pilot, I think it's sort of potentially giving some evidence that this is an area to look at for this population.
It certainly sounds like really compelling evidence to further research in this population. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I loved hearing about this. It's a super interesting study, and I look forward to the secondary data analysis paper and hopefully a big trial in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you.
Well, Jamie, I found that super interesting. I think, first of all, that they didn't find what they were expecting to find, but, you know, found something kind of equally interesting. The fact that so many people quit, as you mentioned in your interview with Ellie, I think was really interesting and maybe something that we wouldn't normally expect. But I think as you explored a bit in the interview, maybe it was that population group and that e-cigarettes might have been a new thing for them to try. And that was really, really positive. But also that idea that the way that people puff might be having an effect on their ability to quit or might be something that develops over time in people. So although there wasn't the positive data that they were expecting in this study, I agree with Ellie that it's a really great area for future research. And it kind of highlights how sometimes things that we observe in the real world don't seem to work quite in the same way when we look at them in a lab or in a, you know, randomized controlled trial, but that can also really teach us things. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more work that comes out of Ellie's group.
Me too. And it's so nice to see a trial in older adults. You know, we know there are a few of them out there, but generally, the focus within vaping research has really been in younger people. And we know that the group, particularly in the US, that's most likely to benefit from e-cigarettes now is older adults. So I really hope that they continue work in this space. All right, that is it from us this month. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to take our annual holiday break over December, and we will be back with you in the new year. Please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you to Jonathan Livingston Banks for running searches, to Elsa Butler for producing this podcast, and of course to all of you for tuning in. The music is written by Johnny Berliner and I, and performed by Johnny. Our Living Systematic reviews are supported by funding from Cancer Research UK. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Nicola and I, and do not represent those of the funders. Switching to vaping is safer than smoking, may help you quit in the end. But remember to mention the findings we have, can't tell us what'll happen long term. Even though we know vaping is safer than smoking, we may still find cause for concern. If you're thinking of switching to vaping, do it! That's what the experts agree. Smoking's so bad for you, they all concur. The vaping beast burning, there's much to learn of effects long term yet to be seen.